Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you pushed it again? The hydraulics worked opposite and pushed her up.
I know.
That's great.
Hello, hello. It's Radio Dale 49.
This week in music history, Kenny G blows for 45 minutes.
A Dale speaking blog update.
And we have new Christmas music from Ali and Theo.
Then we'll have my interview with Eric Ashdown of Indie Loop.
Welcome to This Week in Music History for the week of November 28th. So let's start with November 28th, 1991, Nirvana recorded a performance for the BBC television show Top of the Pops in London. When asked to lip-sync Smells Like Teen Spirit to a pre-recorded tape, Kurt Cobain protests by singing in a low-pitched, funny voice, with the rest of the band not even trying to mime in time to the track.
That's what you get.
That's fantastic.
Side news, I understand this, not this week, but the week before, Unplugged came out, so it's 20 years old.
Oh wow, yeah. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Unplugged, which means I must be 22. I lied. November 29th, 2001. Last week and this week, Beatles guitarist George Harrison died in Los Angeles of lung cancer, age 58. Following the breakup of the Beatles, Harrison had a successful career as a solo artist and later as part of the Traveling Wilburys, which was one of my favorite bands when I was in high school.
Aww.
But the weird thing is, little side story, they didn't release the CD for Traveling Wilburys till like 4 years ago.
Huh.
So they kind of disappeared for about 20 years. But you remember them? Bob
I
Dylan,
the
George
name.
Harrison, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, and Jeff Lynne.
I was probably not really, if that was 2001 after.
It would have been well before that, would have been like the 90s.
I would have been like 14,
yeah,
so I wasn't really digging that stuff.
The youngest member of the Beatles, he was 16 when he joined. Kind of Bieber's age, huh? His compositions included Taxman, Here Comes the Sun, Something, and While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Wow.
He released the acclaimed triple album, All Things Must Pass, in 1970, from which came the number one, worldwide number one single, My Sweet Lord. An accomplished gardener, he restored the grounds of his 120-roomed English home,
jeez,
Friar Park.
Way to make my life seem very insignificant in one paragraph. God.
That was a lot. November 30th, 1982, Michael Jackson's Thriller album was released. So if you pay attention, if you listened to our podcast last week, you'll note that the year later, in 83, was when the music video for Thriller came out.
Yeah.
Album now, cycles were different, weren't
album
they?
Album cycles were different.
Yeah.
November 30th.
Interesting.
And also after Halloween, which seems odd. For both.
For both. I guess they were aiming for the poppier, dancey thing. Like, wasn't Billie Jean on that?
I think it was the first one.
Yeah.
Crazy. December 1st, 1997. Kenny G set a new world record when he held a note on his saxophone for 45 minutes and 47 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Side note. The record has since been broken by Giovanni Escalante, who held a note for 1 hour, 30 minutes, and 45 seconds, using a technique that allows him to blow and breathe at the same time. Say what you will about that one.
December 2nd, 1983, MTV aired the full 14-minute version. This is like Thriller month, isn't it? The full 14-minute version of Michael Jackson's Thriller video for the first time. Now regarded as the most influential pop music video of all time, in 2009 the video was inducted into the National Film Registry of the Library of Congress, the first music video ever to receive the honor for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
Cool.
Also on December 2nd, Dale Peters was born.
Dale Peters was born when Michael Jackson's video aired.
What year?
Aired.
Dale was definitely not born in 83.
What are you saying, Amber?
But happy birthday, Dale.
Happy birthday,
Dale.
Dale
was born in 1980.
Yes,
that's
he'd love
for us to say that.
And one day later, different year, December 3rd, 1948, is Ozzy Osbourne's birthday.
Yay.
He was born, do you know his real name?
Oswald Osbornson.
John.
I knew this at one point.
John Michael Osbourne.
John Michael Osbourne.
John Michael.
John.
He just it seems weird that he'd be a John. He doesn't. He's odd.
Jonathan. Time for dinner. We're having bats.
Nice. December 4th, 1979, U2 appeared at the Hope and Anchor in Islington, London. Misnamed the U2s, they played to only 9 people, and the show ended abruptly after The Edge broke a guitar string. So, note to all you bands that even the biggest bands played to 9 people.
Nice origin story.
Yeah, and they were also called the U2s.
I kind of like that.
They should have kept it. They should have really kept
it. The B-52s.
They used to be called Feedback.
Feedback.
And The Hype, but not the U2s.
Well, they were the U2s once for one show.
Yeah. One night only, 1979.
One night only. If only somebody had been filming.
And that's it for this week in music history. Have a musically historical week.
Yay! Hey everybody, this is Rue, and I just wanted to update you about the Dale Speaking blogs, which you can find at dalespeaking.com. Our most recent ones are featured on the front page, or you can click the link to go to the blog section to go through all of them. Now, we've got quite a lot, and we always write 5 blogs a week. Mondays and Fridays are more fun ones. On Music Monday, we always have a couple of songs that are our favorites that we'd like to share with you. On Friday, we'll have something sort of a bit more offbeat, like pictures from celebrity weddings or just strange stuff like that. It's sort of just a fun Friday thing. But in between those Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, me, Amber, and India all write blogs about things that are on our minds, things that we have noticed in the music industry, and we're generally just trying to find to start a conversation about music and how to be an independent musician and get ahead in this world, or a little bit of everything. So, for instance, recently we've had a blog about how long you should wait between releasing an album or a single to Canadian radio if you're an international artist. I wrote a 3-part blog series where the concept was a gold record, an award, or critical acclaim. Which would you like? And I gave each one of them the sort of pros and cons and looked at whether getting a gold record or winning a Juno or having critical acclaim on blogs and publications, whether that's something you'd want to strive for. There's been a bit more Christmas music attention because it's coming up, obviously. And one of our most popular blogs of all time, the new Christmas albums for 2013, is up there. So you could see what albums are coming out this year. We look at a little bit of everything, and much of the Radio Dale story stories are drawn from blogs. We'll have conversations in the office, we'll come up with ideas or talk through things, and then those will tend to lead to one of us writing about the idea in the blog. So I just wanted to let you know, you can find them at dalespeaking.com and get sort of a daily dose of music. You can also sign up at tinyletter.com/dalespeaking to get it sent straight to your inbox. It's text only, no pictures, just the information that we are writing down and sending out. So if you would like to keep up to date, that is another way to do it. I also have one more quick announcement. Early in 2014, we are going to be starting a new blog series that is almost a course. And what we're doing is putting together all of the things that we find over the past years that we've found will get in the way of an artist achieving their goals, whether that's pitfalls, things that artists are worried about, things that musicians maybe don't understand, or that are constantly sent in through submissions or emails, little mistakes that are made that don't have to be made. We're going to try to boil it down to 30 blogs and release one blog a day over the month. And we're going to call it something fancy. We haven't come up with a name yet because we're really busy coming up with all the ideas for all the blogs. Our general hope is that you will read each blog each day, maybe take a few notes, and then after 30 days, you'll be much better off when it comes to submitting to somebody like a radio promoter like us, or to a label, or just reaching out to anyone like a blog to tell people about your music, and you won't be making the same mistakes that so many people are making. And we're not talking huge mistakes, though in some cases they are. We're talking about things that happen over and over again, mistakes we see come across our desk that are just enough to set off a little bit of a flag and make us wonder, is this person serious about music? So keep an eye out for that. We just wanted to get you updated about what we're up to aside from Radio Dale. And of course, you can find out all this information by going to dalespeaking.com, flipping through the site and finding out what we're all about. So thanks for your time. We're going to move on to a bit of music now.
Hey, so next up, we've got a new song from Ally and Theo. You are probably familiar with them from their previous years of Christmas songs. They're really known for their songs 2,000 Miles. That's kind of their biggest one out. And last year, they had Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and a few more Christmas songs. So this year, the first one that we will be working with by them is I'll Be Home for Christmas. And here it is.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents under the tree. Well, Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams, and I'll be home for Christmas, if only in my dreams.
Recently, I had a chance to sit down with Eric Ashdown, who is a very cool entrepreneur and came up with a neat idea for helping people create their own mashups and remixes online. He's stripped away all of the elements of a software like Ableton or Logic or something people will use on a professional level to make remixes, to make it almost a game, something simple anybody could use and very intuitive, and he calls it Indie Loop. So it will be launching in full soon. You can go check out the beta online at Indie Loop. That's I-N-D-I-L-O-O-P. But for now, check out this interview with Eric Ashdown, the founder and CEO of Indie Loop.
Yeah, hello.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you perfectly.
Excellent. Same. So how's your day going?
Off to an interesting start. Just,
oh, really?
You know, yeah, 100 things going on. Nothing. It's just one of those days. You know, when you're trying to get everybody on the phone, trying to organize things, things aren't getting organized as quickly or the way you'd like. You know, part of life. No big deal.
Hurrying up to wait kind of a thing?
Yeah, more or less at this point. I'm in Montreal right now, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was in New York, I'm in Montreal, and then I'm heading to Philadelphia on Friday for a panel.
Okay, cool. Is it a conference there, or?
I was invited to sit on a panel at University of Pennsylvania.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a panel at UPenn, just to talk about like digital music industry, where it's going, stuff like that.
Okay.
So yeah, it's interesting. It'll be fun. So I'm here now, and just I've got 100 things to do before I leave. you know, getting everything done right now.
Cool. So I guess we'll get started. So I don't have to hold you on too long.
Yeah, no problem.
Awesome. So I just wanted to start off by asking you what your background was and I guess sort of what music means to you.
So my background is really, it's in marketing, I guess. It's marketing and business development. Mm-hmm. I went to Concordia University in Montreal. I did marketing and I inevitably dropped out and started working with a friend of mine at a marketing company that he'd started that did promotional products and printing. Mm-hmm. That's really how I got my start in the business world more than anything else. But musically, I played guitar, I played bass, I played in bands when I was a teenager. I was always about being around music and being involved with it. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know to what degree and to what I'd end up doing with it at any point in my life. I never really thought I would be in the music industry either.
Cool. And then, just maybe describe Indie Loop sort of briefly, and then maybe the sort of the trip that got you from marketing to marketing digital music.
Well, yeah. So the way the whole thing started is actually it's how most other startups start. You just are sitting around wishing something existed and it didn't. I mean, I got to college and university and I wanted to be a DJ and I was playing less and less. I was playing my guitar and my bass less and less. Mm-hmm. And I just want to mix music. I said, but I really don't even want to mix music. All I really want to do is take two or three songs that I know, mash them up and share them with my friends on Facebook and just have, you know, get that social validation. Mm-hmm. So I said, there's got to be a way I can do this. So I looked online. I couldn't find any website. I couldn't find any apps I could download. And I couldn't find any tracks I'd be able to mix for the software that was available. So I said, well, what if we just built something like this? And, you know, we tried to build it when I was living in Montreal. It failed horribly. And then the idea stuck with me. And then when I moved to Vancouver, we just started it up there.
Very cool. And now Indie Loop is kind of unique in that you guys actually have licensed music, as well as indie music. So people can, correct me if I'm wrong, people can submit their music, even if they're just creating it on Fruity Loops in their house for other people to remix, but you also have major artists available.
Yeah, so right now, most of the content that's up has, I'll be honest, has not been cleared by the record labels. We're still in negotiation with a lot of people. Some deals are done, some deals aren't. But yeah, the idea is we want people to be able to submit their music, provided it's their own original tracks and, you know, they own the rights to it. Mm-hmm. And then we would throw the stem tracks up for other people to remix. It's a new way for you to engage with your music, whether you're in a band or you're a hip hop performer. You're a DJ, whatever it is, we really want to give people, the average everyday individual, the ability to make a mashup and do something cool and really engage with music in a way that hasn't been done before.
Cool. And what do you hope to sort of see over the next three or four, well, actually, let's say the next year, what do you hope to see with Indie Loop? What's your next goal?
I guess the goal at the end of the day is just to make it a really cool product. Mm-hmm. I know the guy who started Dropbox, he said the day that he felt like he had done something amazing was when he was sitting in a Starbucks drinking a coffee and the person sitting across the table from him said, hey, can you just Dropbox that to me? To the other, you know, two people in different conversations. And I think about that and I said, that's a really cool accomplishment, you know? To have you create something that turns into a verb. I think if Indie Loop became a verb, like, hey, just Indie Loop that song, it'd be great. I think that's ultimately the end of the day. But really, I think like when we get to a point where we can show it to people what we've done, I mean, every time we show it to somebody new, they look at it and say, this is awesome, this is so cool. But to get to a point where people are showing it to us, or you know what I mean? Like when you can see that you've done something that people genuinely appreciate and are genuinely enjoying.
Cool. Have there been any Indie Loop creations you've done or other people have done that you've enjoyed maybe more than the original, or something you like threw on your phone so you could listen to?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a mobile app yet. It's being developed as we speak. Mm-hmm. But so everything's in the web right now at indieloop.com. But yeah, there's been some amazing stuff that people have made. Things you'd never think of. Like I've heard a James Brown, Jay-Z... MC Hammer Deadmau5 mashup. When I heard that, I'm like, that's, and like, you listen to it, like, this is actually really good. And it's things like, you just don't know what you're going to get out of it. You know, people are mashing up country and dubstep, and other people are mashing up, you know, early 90s hip hop with pop music from like last year. And, you know, you get a really nice blend of music. And that's what I think is one of the special things about it.
Cool.
And how do you see, what do you see, how do you see mashups in this kind of music creation in the overall world of music? Because some people sort of see it as, well, you're taking other people's ideas and just sort of taking advantage of them, where other people say you're taking other people's creations and making a new creation from it. Do you see mashups being something we'll hear more on the radio or in film or anything like that in future?
I think that you see a lot of people now who are more open to mashups, who are doing things. For example, Rat-A-Tat, that, you know, they have all their own music that they created themselves, but they have two albums of just remixes where they take hip hop artist vocals and just put them all over their own original tracks. It's not distributed, that, you know, they didn't make a penny for it. They just did it for fun. But the fact is, these guys are signed to a huge indie label. They're signed to Beggars. And it's just something they did. Yeah. I think that what we're seeing now are mainstream artists, and everybody is just doing more and more and more mashups. And it's more acceptable, and nobody's getting sued over it. People aren't getting into trouble like they were before. It's coming more and more accepted because it's part of the culture. I think that where we are now, it's at a point where the record labels and the music industry as a whole has to figure out a way, or is figuring out ways to monetize these remixes. And I think once we can do that, we'll be at a much more interesting point. It's just society. It's exactly what society wants to see. The problem is the industry is a little slow to catch up.
Yeah. Well, there is people like Madeon, who basically made his career off of a crazy mashup. And he went from sort of 17-year-old French DJ to, I don't know who he's signed with right now, but I do know he tours the world and headlines major events. And all he did was take 32 songs and mash them up into his own little creation.
Yeah, like Skrillex is the same thing. That's how he got his big break. He made a couple of really good mashups at the beginning. He just remixed other people's music, and that's what works. And then, you know, he got signed, he produced his own original stuff.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, it really is great to see that's where we're going. But like I said, it has to come from the other end. Like, it has to come from the record label's perspective, where they have to say, okay, well, let's start exploring these revenue models. Let's start, you know, getting into these things, and let's stop being so against it and fighting it and resist it. You know, from where we are, I've spoken to a lot of people, and we obviously, you know, some people are just too skeptical, or will say, you know, we'll get involved later. But I mean, the feedback we've gotten has been universally positive. The problem is also, it's clearing things, and there's so much bureaucracy and so much red tape and so many things that are in the way to get anything done, that it just takes forever things to evolve on top of it.
Yeah, totally. I just wanted a question about sort of how Indie Loop works from the perspective of the content creator, of the person who is actually making the mashup. Now, do you sign up under a username? Can other people see other people's mashups? How does that sort of social sharing way work on Indie Loop?
Yeah, so the way it works is you go to the landing page, or within the next month and a half, you'll hopefully be downloading an iPad app.
Yeah.
And you'd log in via your email or via Facebook. You'd be on an artist page, and you just see a bunch of artists. You click the artist you want. You see the instrument you want from that song. You just drag it to the bottom. And you do that with a handful of stems from different artists. And then once you're done, you just, you know, cut it up, and then you're able to publish it. And when you publish it, then you're able to share it on Facebook, Twitter, and other forms of social media.
And will it be published within Indie Loop as well?
Yes.
For people to – cool.
Yeah, it is published within Indie Loop as well. It's published in a way where, you know, you can see it. Others can listen to your mixes. Other people can share your mixes. Other people can mix your mixes, and things like that. We really, you know, we wanted to drill it down and just get to a point where it is very creative, and it's very open, and, you know, it's a place where you can make conversation and talk to people and get involved with stuff like that.
Cool. There was an obvious increase back in the late 2000s of YouTube stars, and now we're starting to see stuff like Vine stars. Do you foresee any Indie Loop stars developing?
I think that's the goal at the end of the day. I think what we've done is we've really taken something like a multi-track mixing software, and we've dumbed it down so much that really the barrier to entry is internet connection. The goal at the end of the day really is to see that, you know, I'm just going to throw an example out there. Let's say Diplo signs on.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a huge DJ, and he makes a mix. And then, you know, Johnny Super Kid, living in his parents' basement in Omaha, Nebraska, logs on, and he's able to make a mix that is comparably good with little to no background. Mind you, you know, it's not the exact same thing. The person who made this isn't touring, but, you know, he could be a celebrity or a DJ in his own right on our platform.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going for, is just to see that people are able to do that, and people have all this fun, and people can, you know, get involved in that way.
Very cool. So one just final question. You had mentioned an iPad app. Can you tell us sort of what's in the future, both for Indie Loop and for you?
For the iPad app we're developing, it's literally the exact same thing as the website, just on an iPad. The goal at the beginning was really to make it so you could start mixing on your computer, continue on your tablet, and finish on your phone. Mm-hmm. You know, you could start and mix, and you could really bring your creations and your music anywhere you go. So we're getting pretty close to finishing the iPad version. Like I said, it should be done at the end of November. We'll see when it goes up in the iTunes store. I'm guessing, you know, after some beta testing. December, January. Mm-hmm. Where do we see me in the future? I'm hopefully doing this for the next couple of years. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great ride.
Nice.
I have zero problems showing up to work every day, and I have more problems leaving work than anything else, but in good ways. I like what we do. I think we're in a great industry. I think it's an amazing time to be where we are. It's great just to see that, you know, things are evolving and people are more open to change now than they were 10 years ago. And, you know, in 2012 was the first time we've seen the digital revenue go up in the music industry.
Yeah, totally.
It was the first time we've seen a spike was last year. So I think this is, everything's looking good. It's just getting to that point where, you know, everybody can start working together and start being a little less paranoid. That's about it. Yeah.
Awesome. Great. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Drew.
And that has been Radio Dale number 49.
I'm India.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Rue. If you'd like to find us online, we're at dalespeaking.com, Twitter, dale_speaking, Facebook, Dale Speaking, Pinterest, Dale Speaking. You probably found this podcast on Podomatic, on iTunes, or on Stitcher, because that's where we have it.
Or one of our Facebooks or Twitters.
Or one of our Facebooks or Twitters. This is subscribe, review, love.
Yes, the one thing that helps that Rue has mentioned before is if you write a review in iTunes, that really helps our placement within a chart.
Yeah, and it shows people that, like, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I am also guilty of reviewing very few of them.
Yeah.
But I've gotten into a habit of, if I listen to a podcast and really like it, I always go and leave a review because I've watched it happen. A show with 40, 50 listeners a week will be in the top 10 on iTunes just because every week 5 people review it because they like it.
Huh.
So
if you do a podcast, that's something you should be something paying you should attention keep in to mind. As well.
We should do a podcast episode.
About podcasts.
How to do a podcast. Exactly, how to do a podcast.
Because we're experts.
We are experts.
Well, Rue is, I'm not.
I actually, here's my big, I think this is 110th podcast that I did this past year. Thank you.
That's a lot of podcasts.
That's a lot of podcasts, isn't it? So next year, if things go as planned, it'll be about 160. I think we're done.